Hey, this is Chris Osborne, and I am in Stolen Space Gallery in East London with no hyperbole here. One of my favorite artists, Dan Witz, who's in town from New York. He's about to open one of his shows, and that is Mosh Pit Paintings, 2010 through 2018. It opens, as I'm recording, tomorrow night, 1st of February, and runs for how long? A while.
Probably most of February.
Most of February. Okay. Well, hello, Dan. How are you doing?
Good to see you, Chris.
You too. Yeah, it's been a few years, but we've interacted over the years, often through at this gallery because of an opening you have here. We've done some stuff in New York together, though, and it's great to sit down with you.
Yeah. Great to see you.
Yeah, you too. So, Mosh Pit Paintings, you want to... Where does the idea come from? So,
well, so probably starting around the year, probably in the late 90s, I started painting these collections of people at hardcore concerts, sort of Baroque compositions of lots of figures involved in some sort of melees or violence, and loosely grouped under the category of mosh pits. So every year I do about two of them because they take so long to do because there's so many people in them. And this is doesn't go all the way back, but this is kind of a survey of three of the major pieces from, you know, from 2000 to 2018. And there's studies and other smaller backup pieces that go with them.
Okay. So you're saying they take a long time.
Yes.
So maybe for someone unfamiliar with your work, can you describe, it's kind of like you're taking contemporary themes but using an old master's approach. Would that be a good way to describe it?
Yeah, okay. It's a painstaking old master approach, so it involves building up layers with underpaintings and glazes, and typically one figure would take a month or so there's usually about a couple dozen minimum in these things, so they can take forever. But I do a lot of things in between, and you know, like while I'm working on one of these, I'll be doing street art, and I'll be doing studies, and I'll be doing, you know, prints and all sorts of other things. But every year, like two or three of these come out of my studio. So.
Okay. So yeah, they are painstaking. So we've got just behind me here. What's the size of this canvas? This would be what?
Maybe it's about four foot by six.
4 by 6. Yeah. And there are dozens, I'm guessing, people. And the detail is phenomenal, and each one is actually from a photograph?
Yeah, what I do is I photograph at concerts or wherever I'm at. I do raves, hardcore concerts, but these are mostly hardcore. The oldest one there is from a nightclub, just a really crowded Saturday night nightclub in New York City. Yeah. It's called Lotus Lounge. It was a hot spot at the time. But yeah, I go there with... you know, back then I had it was before digital cameras, but now I use my digital camera, and I photograph and I take hundreds and hundreds of pictures of people in mosh pits, dancing, fighting, usually in motion, and then I come home and piece them together in Photoshop to make these compositions. So each figure is from a separate photograph, usually one or two figures.
So they could be from different shows, that sort of thing?
Usually I'm pretty consistent. Like, sometimes I'll use, the same venue, different bands for one.
Okay.
But usually I call them the name of the band that's playing. So the one on the right here is called Sick of It All. Okay. And they were not even headlining that night at this place in Long Island that I used to go to called Ollie's Club Revolution. So those are all from Sick of It All.
Great. And so I guess, in short, why? I mean, what captivated you? Were you just going to these shows because you're a fan of the music?
Oh, well, I used to be in bands like this when I was a kid. And always interested in the level of insanity and intensity and chaos. And never thought that when I retired from playing music, when I got too old in my mid-20s, thought I'd recapture that kind of intensity in my paintings, but... and it took me quite a while to figure out how to do it and to get the skills to do it, but eventually the whole process was really satisfied that need to get that intensity. So going to the concerts, you know, capturing these pictures, it's a really difficult, intense, like physical process.
Right, yeah.
And then the puzzling together the compositions, which does take months too, is as challenging as anything I've ever done. And then the actual painting of them, you know, the technical feat is also really as, you know, harder than anything I've ever done in my life. So it sort of satisfies my need for something so over the top.
Okay. So, okay, so in your 20s, when you're a musician in New York, sort of the New York punk scene, I guess.
Yeah.
That was what, the 80s?
Yeah, 80s, early, okay. Early to mid 80s.
Early to mid 80s. Okay, that sounds very exciting. Were you were you already a painter, already an artist then?
Yeah, so, it was a common thing for art students to play in bands.
So you studied art?
Yeah, I went to art school.
In New York?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. And you were drawn to the old masters and...
I was drawn to realist painting always, okay. Which is was not a very popular thing back in the 80s and 90s. It was not hip to be a realist painter.
Right.
But, you know, it was a fringe activity, barely acknowledged, hard to make a career or a living at it. But I kept at it until now when it's become, you know, really accepted and there's a lot of interest and, you know, okay. It's not quite mainstream yet. It's not in, right. You know, your big museum surveys or anything like that that goes on, but I think it's coming.
Okay. And do you find, sort of a tangent here, do you find people most interested in your work, your collectors, buyers, are they coming at it from this sort of underground alternative culture perspective, or are they coming from a fine art background, or like you, kind of a mix?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I really don't like that part of being an artist where the, mm-hmm. you're sort of cultivating or courting people to buy your work, and I've always avoided it and really prefer not to know who buys them. But I do notice that much of my audience is people who are interested in music and hardcore culture and such like that,
okay.
You know, tattoo artists and hot rod people and that whole sort of lowbrow tattoo culture. Seems like, I mean, online, like my social media, that's the prevalent group that people like what I do. Certainly there's a bunch of realist painters working today who are all kind of familiar with each other, and they're, okay. You know, we're in touch about it. But as far as who buys them, I don't know. Occasionally I'll meet someone, but I don't really know.
Okay.
Sometimes they're, I did meet one guy who was a heavy metal drummer.
And, oh, yeah.
He bought like a whole bunch of them for his man cave somewhere. So,
Excellent. That's so cool. In addition to the studio work you do the street art.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to know you, pulling pranks in London in association with, a show you did here, actually, at the old Stolen Space Gallery. And from that, I learned about your studio work and that sort of thing. So can you describe your pranks, what you do on the street?
Yeah, well, I used to do more what you'd call pranks or just sort of one-off intervention installations. Using my realist painting skills, I do trompe-l'oeil, fool-the-eye things. So I think when I was here last time, I was putting figures up in the do-not-enter signs, You know, where it would be someone interacting with the do-not-enter sign, legs coming out of that white rectangle in the middle, stuff like that, which I've continued doing over the years. Interacting with do-not-enter signs in different countries. But now what I do are more sustained activism. And I was here in London another time, come to think of it. So, for instance, I worked with PETA in London for, this was a few years ago now.
I think that's what I missed.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I put up a bunch of trompe-l'oeil, they look like grates or windows with animals, like factory farmed animals behind them, and this was a like thing funded by PETA. They brought me here. We worked together to protest the animal agriculture and humanity and all. It was a bunch of issues. It was really fun, really successful. I've done other stuff with Amnesty International for illegally imprisoned people. Couple years ago, I came to London and I did a series of interventions on those red phone booths where I filled the blank side with a, what looked like another window with people inside. It was called breathing room, so it was people in some sort of meditation or spiritual state. It was, you know, kind of a loosely pointed argument against all the crazy energy going around with the terrorism, and this was right after the, you know, series of attacks in Paris and such like that. Yeah. So I just need to calm down and have a little breathing room.
Sure. So has activism always been an important element
in
your art?
Yeah, well, in the street art, it became important after around maybe 2010 or something, when street art by that point got to be so common and kind of oversaturated that to just merely be putting stuff out on the street for free that wasn't an advertisement for my brand, like that wasn't you know, as transgressive as it used to be. So then I started migrating towards having causes that I cared about to promote against, usually.
Okay.
Like
yeah.
animal agriculture or, you know, brutal dictatorships or terrorism. And now I'm doing last year or so I've been working on this piece. I'm gonna leave some here too.
Okay.
It's called Sanctuary, Is It Safe? And it's a mostly American issue that I'm thinking about, but it's the way that immigration and other disenfranchised people are in constant fear for their lives these days.
So sure.
This is a thing where I'm doing with these mostly gloves or hands hanging on ledges, mm-hmm. Like hiding basically because they're so scared. I mean, it applies here with all the immigrants as well, so
sure.
I think it'll probably resonate a bit here. So, and I, you know, that's something I've been doing the last couple of years. It's there, you wouldn't, if you see any of these pieces, you wouldn't actually associate them with the issue, but I think you'd sense that they were in some kind of opposition to something.
Okay.
And if you're inclined to look further into it, I usually just leave a sticker nearby with some hashtags or
okay.
something.
And people who come to the show, to the Mosh Pit show, we'll see some of this as well.
Yeah, I'm going to drop some in here in the gallery, which mm-hmm. you won't see unless you look for them, and hopefully on the front of the gallery, too.
Okay, cool. Okay. And, what else do you want to chat about before we sign off here?
I can never get over London, actually.
Okay, yeah, you like it here.
It's perfect for me,
perfect.
For street art, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's so much of it here, which is, of course, a bit of a problem that it's hard to find a place for me to put my stuff, but it's so weirdly similar to New York. I was as I walked over here, we're over in Shoreditch and East Side, and there's this dirt in the pores of this city, and it's like New York, you know, it's not sanitary like other places I've been. But I was looking at it today, and it's kind of a rainy, cold, gloomy day here, and it's like, yeah, it's like New York, but it is like 400 years deeper into dirt and the pores they have here, and it's really, like, my stuff, it just belongs here. Like, I put it up, and it just gets sucked into the cityscape here so easily. So, you know, just in my 10-minute walk over, I'm like, I gotta come back and do more work here because it's so easy.
Yeah, well, you know, my experience as an American living in London, who last place I lived was New York, but, you know, I'm from the South. New York and London have more in common than New York and the rest of the U.S. and London and the rest of the U.K.
Oh, agreed.
You know,
yeah.
So they're kind of sister cities in a way. Yeah, so you alluded to this just a second ago, and then also when you're talking about your activism, there's so much street art now. It's kind of lost its edge. I mean, in a way, it's a good thing. So many people are creating, and in a way, it's just, I don't know, I walk through Shoreditch, and I love it, and the way you've described it, but I also look, and it just feels like a kiddie land of color without any meaning or context, really.
That's the nature of the game. I mean, it's chaotic and it's not curated, so it's overcooked in a lot of ways, which is what I love about it, that there really aren't any rules or there's no power on high dictating what's good and what's bad and how much is enough. So yeah, there's going to be too much. There's going to be a lot of bad stuff. I think the bad stuff makes the good stuff look better in a way, especially these days when so much of what's called street art is actually sanctioned murals and commissioned pieces that have authority, you know, that have sort of the benediction of people. And that's such a different thing than the sort of illegal, non-sanctioned interventions that some people are still doing. So it makes that stuff look even stronger and more transgressive now in the midst of all this other stuff. So I don't really have any problem with it. One thing I did notice today, because I got lost, of course, is like, these are landmarks, a lot of these pieces. It's like, oh, there's that pink woman with the, you know, green hair mural.
Yeah, right,
yeah. And it's like, oh, I'm back here again. I shouldn't be here. I got to turn around.
Yeah.
they're landmarks, and they're an important part of the sort of, you know, city experience here.
I agree. And you find similar in Brooklyn and New York?
Not so much.
Okay.
Yeah, it's different there. It is a little more, it's quite a bit more curated. There is not much tolerance for the non-permissional stuff.
Okay.
Places in Bushwick, maybe. I think if you're lost in Bushwick, you could navigate by, oh yeah, I've seen that thing before. But
right,
it's mostly done with permission there.
Okay, okay. And you've been making street art since the 80s?
Yeah, late
70s. Late 70s, like in New York?
Yeah.
Okay. And wow, I guess that was a very different experience then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was different in a lot of ways that you'd expect, but the one thing that was most interesting difference probably today is like no one knew about it or cared about it, and it was kind of laughed at back then.
Right, yeah.
So
it didn't have the credence of it, I guess.
People just thought I was some kind of loser who couldn't show in galleries, and I'm like, wait a second, this is free art.
Yeah, right, yeah. And so as an art student, were you just craving to create? You needed a bigger canvas then, or what drew you to want to create free art on the street?
I would say what drew me to most things in my life is dislike of the status quo.
Okay,
so
sure.
If you were an art student in the late 70s, you were going to the museums and you were seeing conceptual art, a lot of writing on the wall stuff, intellectual, dry, elitist, impossible to understand, a lot of opaque, you know, aesthetic strategies that would leave you cold unless you happened to read up on it and understand what they're trying to say. So that stuff was so annoying to me that I went to the opposite pole, which was to make something easily accessible, visually as well, aesthetically as well as intellectually.
Okay.
So, you know, and combine that with the punk rock life I was living and add the important ingredient, which catalyzed it all into what I ended up doing, was the graffiti on the trains.
Right.
So once I sort of put all that together, those three things, you know, dislike of the status quo, punk rock, which was sort of no future, anti-ambition, and graffiti kids, which was really the most transgressive thing you could ever have thought of back then, the way they'd bomb those trains.
Right.
You know, it was like the craziest thing in the world. Then that's how I kind of got formed, was through those things.
Okay. Well, and here we are today.
Yeah. Now I'm like an old guy still doing it. It's crazy. I'm 60 years old.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little younger than you. I'm catching up. But you mentioned punk rock. And for me, that was sort of a lifestyle and attitude. I guess it still is in some ways. But it just feels so buried now. Do you think those ethos are still alive? Do you see it in millennials? Do you see it in new generation of artists?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's definitely evolved into different, different looks and such. I mean, basically, punk rock became, even while I was doing it, mostly just a fashion thing. It wasn't really a political lifestyle, but certainly the hardcore scene, as it evolved, has maintained a lot of the purity and sort of singleness of purpose that punk rock had. And hardcore is alive and kicking quite well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So the show is Mosh Pit Paintings, 2010 through 2018. It opens beginning of February and runs for about a month. You can check out the Stolen Space website for more details. And Dan, how can people find out more about your work? And
just Google Dan Witz. W-I-T-Z.
W-I-T-Z. And thank you so much for your time.
Totally.
It's great to see you. And I'm looking forward to the opening tomorrow.
Yeah, me too.
Cheers.
Thanks. Cool.